Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Welcome back to the Tennis Podcast and day two of the Billie Jean King Cup by Gamebridge Finals in Seville. David is here from Solihull. Hello, David.
Hello. Yes, it's nighttime here in Solihull. It's even more nighttime in Seville because it's an hour later. But I think the weather's a bit different.
Yes, it is even more nighttime where you are, Matt, right in the heart of it, in Seville. Greetings. How are you doing?
Greetings, yes. 11:17 p.m. as I come to you, which it feels very late. I've been on site for well over 12 hours, but actually in tennis terms, this is somewhat of an early finish, and we have Leila Fernandez to thank for that. Although I should say the tennis is still going on because there's a doubles match about to start involving Eugenie Bouchard and involving Sara Cerebes-Tormo, who has just played for 3 hours but is going back out for doubles.
That is cruel. I can't believe they've sent her back out. Is that like a punishment or something?
No, but I think she just wants to play the most extreme tennis possible, doesn't she? She's not happy if a match is over in an hour. She wants it to be as physically grueling. That's the space she operates in at her best, I think.
Yeah, we're in exactly the same situation as we record, as we were last night, where the night session tie is decided. It's been won by Canada over the hosts, Spain, but there is a chance for Spain to get a point on the board, a win on the board in the doubles, which could be completely irrelevant or could, in a series of events involving lots of maths and headaches, turn out to be entirely crucial. I felt sure up until about an hour ago that we would be leading this podcast with Matt's lunch, because he's promised a barnstorming anecdote involving Simon Briggs. But I do think that Leila Fernandez and Sara Cerebes-Tormo have made a play to jump ahead of Matt's lunch in the running order, because 3 hours for two sets, that's just how Sara Cerebes-Tormo does things. And it was unreal. It was absolutely brilliant, wasn't it, Matt?
It was absolutely superb, yes. Such an intriguing match. You know, how could Leila Fernandez hit through Sara Cerebes-Tormo? Just felt like the sort of question that was constantly being asked in that match. It always felt like it was going to be this sort of log jam on the schedule, because both of them love a three-set thriller. And when the day's earlier matches had already gone so long, I think everyone was looking at this one thinking, oh, we really are going to be there all night, because those two are just going to have such long rallies. We've got access here in the press room to one of the tablets that the teams and the players get to use with all of the sort of data and stats. And I must say, most of the time it's quite hard to navigate and sort of find things of real interest. But there was just an interesting number that popped out, which was that both players just sort of at the very start of the second set of that match, so virtually after one set, both players had run more in one set than Paolini and Garcia had over the course of their very long three-set match earlier in the day, which I think just goes to show that this was a match of tremendously long, grueling rallies and moving each other side to side. And, you know, both players were sort of coming forward quite a, you know, quite a little bit as well. It was a match of just covering the whole court. And, you know, I just found that quite interesting. I think it just sort of illustrated just how grueling it was. But yeah, incredible victory for Leila Fernandez. The term straight sets just feels like such an inadequate term to describe that, because there was anything sort of straight or straightforward about it whatsoever. The match point, it felt like every shot in the rally seemed to hit a line. It was just one of those where it was just, you know, inducing gasps. And yeah, I had a real fun time watching it. I watched the first set in the stadium. I must say I'm a little bit nervous to enter into the stadium because it's quite small. I feel like the chances of being picked up on the dance cam and you have to suddenly perform the Macarena feel quite high, and I'm sort of on edge throughout my entire
time. Has anyone refused?
That's the thing. Everyone's up for it, and I don't think I would be up for it.
It's like Kiss Cam in America, isn't it? If you do either of those things in the UK and it just doesn't work.
No.
Because everyone will just go awkward and go, oh, no, no.
So I watched the first set in the stadium, and then I, having had some near misses with the dance cam, I headed into the press room to watch the second set. And I must say, I found that really fun, actually, because it was one of those things, and you two will both know this, what happens at a tennis event when it starts getting late is that suddenly everyone gets invested in the match. And, you know, it was a sort of real communal watching experience of how long are we going to be here for? And, you know, everyone was sort of living every single point. And that is absolutely the way that it should be. And I had an absolutely great time watching the second set of this match in particular. Hats off to both players. I was just incredibly impressed with the quality and the spirit on display from both of them. It was a real treat.
It was a quintessential Leila Fernandez match, and it was a quintessential Saras Ribes Tormo match, wasn't it? And it was a perfect illustration of how chemistry can operate on a tennis court, and they can bring that out of one another. And of course, it evoked a lot of memories of, I mean, Saras Ribes Tormo is doing her thing week in, week out. If you've got a few hours to spare and you like a certain type of tennis, look up Saras Ribes Tormo wherever she's playing that week, and she'll deliver you that. Leila Fernandez she always brings the intensity, but in terms of her tennis, it's been patchy over the last couple of years, hasn't it, since reaching that US Open final that we so enjoyed, that incredible whirlwind run that she actually backed up for a brief period after New York, didn't she? She had a good run in Indian Wells, the October Indian Wells. We all remember that text that Pam Shriver sent saying, no, it was a tweet, wasn't it? Sorry, on this occasion, it wasn't a personal text from Pam Shriver. I get ahead of myself. She sent a tweet saying, Leila Fernandez is the best show in tennis at the moment. And when she's on, she is. And I know this isn't, tonight's match isn't in isolation. She's been showing signs of coming back to some kind of form over the past few weeks and months. But tonight, David, was a real underlining of that for me. What she brings, what we've been missing in her absence, and perhaps the promise of her return.
I really hope so. I can't think of too many players I would like to see frequently on the biggest stage as Leila Fernandez. In fact, I think I might put her back on the wish list that I've been developing for the future. Now, she's already done things because, as you say, she's reached the US Open final. But I'd had a long day today. It hadn't all been bad, but I've had a bit of a long day. And I must admit, after I'd made the dinner for the kids and they'd, you know, they'd gone on off to do their own thing and I put the tennis on, I was having a bit of a slump. You know, I was sort of thinking, this feels like it could be a really late night. And suddenly, Leila...
You weren't in the mood for Saras Ribes Tormo, David.
Well, the thing is, she kind of pulls you in both directions because it goes on forever. And yet there's something really intriguing about watching her. It's kind of like a bad movie. You can't stop yourself from watching it. And I kind of, as long as she's up against the right kind of player, I enjoy it. She makes things dramatic, and she couldn't have been up against a better player for that occasion than Leila Fernandez. I mean, the funny thing is, thinking back to that US Open, we thought that was what we were going to get from Sara Cerebes-Tormo against Emma Raducanu that day, and then she lost in 50 minutes, winning one game, which is, I think, the moment that we all suddenly thought Raducanu could win the whole thing, you know. But Fernandez, yes, she has had moments since that run, but then they're not often enough on a stage that we end up watching, I don't feel, because, you know, we're trying to watch the biggest matches and the finals and the big runs, and she hasn't had that many of them, really. But when you do get a chance like this, this is the perfect environment. If it's not going to be a Grand Slam or a big tournament at the sharp end, this is where you want it. Team on the sideline, away player in the lion's den of a Billie Jean King Cup tie like that, and she's... What was she, set point down in both sets, I think? And she just sort of drags these shots out of herself. And then her celebrations, the set point in the first set, she did that full celebration thing that she did during the US Open after every match win over Naomi Osaka and Angelique Kerber, and it just became her trademark. And she was what I needed. That match is what I needed today. This evening, I just felt invigorated by the end of it. I mean, it's 10:30 at night here, and suddenly I've got energy, and it's because of those two. It's just a joy to watch.
David's getting his first wind of the day at our half past 10. It was a cracker, wasn't it? And Sara Cerebes-Tormo left absolutely everything out there. She continues to leave absolutely everything out there in the doubles, and who knows, she could score what could end up to be a crucial win in the doubles right now. But on paper, Matt, maybe this is going to sound overly harsh, on paper, Spain shouldn't have found themselves one love down going into that tie, should they?
That's right. Certainly, if you look at the rankings, there was a big shock in the first match of that tie, which was Rebecca Masarova playing for Spain, taking on, I must say, a totally new name to me, not someone I had heard of. When I
texted the group with trepidation, saying, "Had anyone heard of this player before an hour ago?" I felt sure that Matt was going to reply, "Yep, I've seen her play in 15 Billie Jean King Cup ties before now, followed her closely." And I was so relieved when he promptly replied, "No."
Mm. Yeah, because
never heard of her.
Matt can make you feel like you're not a proper tennis podcaster sometimes, can't he?
Yeah, he can. Yeah.
Oh, I hope I don't make you feel like that.
Not intentionally.
It's just your genius at work, Matt. It's just, well, we're all in awe.
Well, I'm surrounded by people who definitely know way more obscure tennis players than I do here at the Billie Jean King Cup, and plenty of them had not heard of Marina Stakusic, 18-year-old Marina Stakusic. So I felt relieved that I wasn't alone in not having heard of her. And look, I think she absolutely caught Rebecca Masarova and the Spanish team by surprise. She managed to capture the real positive of being inexperienced, and that was to play with total fearlessness and freedom rather than be, you know, overawed by the occasion. I think it can go that way when you throw a young player in. But it went absolutely the right way for Canada, and sort of everything she hit was just turning to gold. And on the other hand, Rebecca Masarova kind of froze. You know, she was making her debut as well, and, you know, she said in her press conference that quite simply she just didn't handle the nerves, didn't handle the occasion, didn't handle herself really in that match and didn't play anywhere near the level that she is capable of. And it ended up being a little bit of an awkwardly one-sided win, really, for Stakusic, who has won a lot of matches recently on the ITF tour, you know, the sort of level below the WTA. So she is match tight, she is confident, but being able to transfer that to a higher level, very, very impressive. And yeah, maybe Canada have got another young teenager, you know, and they seem to have had a sort of production line of them over the last 10 years or so. And yeah, certainly an incredible way to announce herself.
Her brother plays tennis as well, Marco. That's something I've learned.
Good info, Catherine. And actually, yeah,
he's 2 years older.
You were mentioning, Matt, about the run she's had on the ITF circuit. And I looked up those results and just the sheer number, the volume of wins that she's accumulated. It made me think of yesterday's conversation about Alicia Molik's picks. And she'd gone with the tried and trusted names of Daria Saville and Ila Tomljanovic, who just hadn't got any form coming in and were really quite poor and beaten handily. And yet you got Kim Burrell, who'd won 30 plus matches, who was just on the sidelines. It's a hell of a pick, isn't it? If you consider that they'd got Jeannie Bouchard, who's reached a Grand Slam final in the squad. They've got Rebecca Marino as another player. You know, it was a surprise pick in the first place, really. And yet she's just gone out there and taken the opportunity fearlessly.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's feels like very good captaining.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm just slightly distracted because I am looking at Jeannie Bouchard on a tennis court. And obviously I knew that was going to happen. You told us that at the start of this podcast, but just actually seeing it makes me realize how strange it feels to see it. I don't remember when I last saw Jeannie Bouchard on a tennis court. I know she's been playing at a certain level in and out, but I haven't thought about her in those. I mean, she's, as discussed yesterday, sorry to trigger you, David, she is a professional pickleball player, which, okay, she's doing in tandem with still playing some professional tennis, but, you know, Novak Djokovic isn't balancing his tennis career also with a pickleball career. It's somewhat of a statement about where she is with her tennis career.
No serious tennis player.
I don't know. It's really weird. It's really weird seeing her.
Yeah,
especially, sorry to throw you under the bus here, Matt, but you did tell us at the start of the day that there would be no Jeannie Bouchard today.
Well, I said that she wasn't playing in the singles. Those were the when those nominations came out. You know, she wasn't in the lineup, but the doubles can be changed up until the very last minute.
I don't think I've ever seen her play doubles before, so I'm quite intrigued to know how that ends up.
It's really I'm really floored by it. It's just weird. I mean, imagine if we'd had Bouchard and Bedossa on court together. No thoughts about that.
Well,
okay.
I mean, it is interesting now to think what the losing teams go on to do in their next group match. You know, does the captain, Annabelle Medina-Garrigues, does she just go and overhaul the whole thing now and put someone else in? I mean, does Masarova, is that lost confidence in her, I wonder? I mean, it's a big call coming up.
I wouldn't be putting Masarova out again.
It's like when a goalie has a shocker in football, isn't it? The only way for them to overcome it and for the problem not to snowball is for their manager to show faith in them and keep putting them out there. I mean, but obviously the manager doesn't necessarily want to keep putting them out there if they're committing howlers. Is that because of the tennis that she played, the attitude that she showed, Matt, the fact that she didn't look like she was necessarily enjoying the occasion or the pressure?
Yeah, I think the first element for sure, just the sheer level of tennis she played wasn't good, and the fact that she didn't seem to be relishing it or enjoying it. I mean, I should say it's quite possible that Spain's next tie will be dead, because they may well be out of the competition before they play again, because Canada and Poland play tomorrow. And if Canada win that tie, then Spain's tie with Poland, which I think is on Friday, will be obsolete, because Canada will already be through, which is a problem with this format.
Would they still play the tie?
Yes.
Yeah, that could be a tough scene crowd-wise, it being a dead rubber. You'd hope perhaps the hosts being involved would boost the atmos. How was it today, Matt, first-time hosts playing in this venue? How would you rate the atmosphere?
It was pretty good. You know, it was absolutely fine. I would very much point to everything I said yesterday. I think that holds true. You know, it's relatively good. I wouldn't say it's good overall for what it possibly could be for this event. It's the same crowd for the morning session and the afternoon session. You know, it's only one ticket, so it's not like everyone was waiting around for the Spain tie. They had been there all day. So I think, you know, it sort of grew with Spain coming on in the afternoon, and there was a lot of good noise. You know, there was people sort of banging their feet and waving their scarves and, you know, making all the sounds you want to hear at the Billie Jean King Cup, for sure. But it's a relatively small venue, and it was nowhere near close to full at any point today. I would say probably three quarters full was as full as it got. And that just seems like a massive shame, really, especially when you've got the hosts playing.
That's really tough. That was my impression watching it. That's quite tough to hear. I was hoping for more.
Yeah.
From, you know, the host's debut in Seville against Canada as well, you know, Saras Ribes-Tormo, Leila Fernandez for tennis fans in the know is a kind of guaranteed good time, isn't it? I know it's easy to say in hindsight, but yeah, it's hard not to be disappointed by that.
Yeah, and a lot of kids here, which, you know, is fantastic. I'm very pleased that there are kids coming to watch. But I think that a lot of those, you know, kids have been sort of brought in as sort of seat fillers, really. And, you know, that's a good solution. It's just a shame that that problem exists in the first place. And I think, you know, a lot of them weren't necessarily able to sort of stay the whole day, even though a lot of Spanish kids do stay up very late, even on a school night. There's no doubt that the sort of, you know, some of them had to leave. So I think that was sort of thrown into the mix of the atmosphere as well.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
Okay, well, we've got the morning tie to talk about as well. Before we do that, of course, lunch.
Lunch.
Much has been promised.
Yes. Well,
first and foremost, how was the service? How was the food?
The service was very good, actually, today. I think I've cracked the system. You have to catch a waiter's attention before you sit down. Because if you just go and sit down, they will leave you alone. But if you go up and sort of order, then they come out and bring you the food relatively quickly and efficiently. So nailed the practicality of it. The lunch anecdote today, as you said, involves Simon Briggs, because he rolled into town today for, I don't know if we can say who he's interviewing, but let's just say someone very important, a big interview. Unfortunately,
in the paper this weekend, I think. Quite a big deal for him.
Unfortunately, on the menu today was some extremely garlicky hake. And
okay.
Simon wolfed it down and then realised that he was having to go and interview said person. And he was very worried that his breath might sort of knock them out. So lunchtime involved trying to find Simon Briggs some mints to cover up his garlicky breath.
Were you successful in that endeavour?
Mints were found, Simon was saved, and I think the interview was a hit.
Matt's the man for solutions to problems.
Okay. Right, moving on to the morning tie. Italy and France, this one won by Italy. 2-1. They won both the singles. Martina Trevisan coming from a set down to beat Elise Cornet 2-6, 6-2, 6-2. And famously good draw, Jasmine Paolini responding to David's criticism with a 6-4 in the third, 2 hour 39 minute win over Caroline Garcia 7-6, 5-7, 6-4. Matt, I was following this match, but I wasn't able to watch as much of it as I'm sure you were. Was it as good as that scoreline suggested? And sub-question, how wrong is David about Jasmine Paolini?
It was a good match, yes. I must say I enjoyed the first one more. We will get to that, I'm sure. That was more my kind of tennis match because it was just quite funny. Whereas the second one was very, very close, very hard fought. It actually started in quite a scary manner because Caroline Garcia, serving a 2-all in that first set, hit an ace. But as she landed after hitting the ace, she sort of took a step and rolled her ankle. And it looked for a while like that was going to be it, like the match was going to be over. She had to hobble to her chair. She received treatment and they sort of mummified her foot and just put so much strapping on it. I was amazed really that she was able to move, but she was. And the match continued, thankfully. And it was just one of those matches where there was so little between the two players. It was really all about the key decisive moments. And Paolini played them much better than Caroline Garcia because Garcia was 5-2 up in the first set tiebreak with a double break, so serving at 5-2, and just hit a flurry of errors and the set was over. And then she did really well to reset and win the second set and ended up being a break up in the deciding set. And then the same thing happened there as well, just a flurry of errors, and the match really sort of ran away from her. And in her press conference afterwards, she said that it kind of summed up her season, to be honest, the fact that she just hasn't been able to close any of these really big close matches. And, you know, whereas last year she was playing that really aggressive tennis, and it was working. She's doing it now, and it isn't working, and it just sort of results in errors. And Paolini had beaten Caroline Garcia just a few weeks ago in China, and she managed to just do the same again, just sort of pip her at the last possible moment in the third set. And I actually asked her about how she thinks she's got better since Wimbledon. I sort of used Wimbledon as my marker to say what's happened since then, because she has had some great results. She's reached a couple of tour level finals, quarterfinals in Cincinnati, and I don't know. She didn't have a very convincing sort of answer, other than the fact that she just feels like she belongs a bit more now, sort of at that level. She's just accumulated more matches against the best players, and she just has more confidence now. She did say, in sort of her own terms, that she used to be a good draw. She sort of said, I used to play the top players and I used to just always lose easily. And I was like, yep, David's nodding along at that one. But, you know, she's sort of match tough and match confident now. And there's a real spirit about the Italian team. They don't have a standout player. She, you know, she's the number one, but there's not much between her and Trevisan and Cocchiaretto. They're all quite similar, and I think they've all sort of got each other's backs. And yeah, it was a really big win for Italy to see all that tie.
David, have we seen the best of Caroline Garcia?
Oh, that's a great question. I really don't know, because I think it's possible we have. But then she had that fantastic run in 2017, didn't she, where she won the last two tournaments to get into the WTA finals, those huge, huge tournaments in Wuhan and Beijing. And then just when you think she's going to build on that, she didn't. And she just sort of disappeared for a while, really. And then she bounced back again and had a fantastic year last year. And I just feel that she at some point has to develop some kind of a plan B. I know that what we were saying last year is her plan B is to just double down and to not worry about the fact that she's going to miss. And she sort of plays a percentage game of, I hit everything to try and hit winners. And if I hit one more winner than error, I win the match and my opponent is relevant. But when you watch her try to return serve, no matter how good the opponent is, and taking and giving no sort of respect to the serve, I don't feel. I love it when players stand in to take a return early, but she's doing it off first and second serves, no matter who she's against. So if somebody hits a good deep serve against her, she's got so little chance of adapting and blocking it back and getting into a rally. And I just feel like it seems a bit brainless, that sort of type of approach to the sport. And I know she's had some tough times this year, and I wish the best for her. You know, it's not nice to hear some of the things she's been going through and suffering with, and she's had turmoil with the coach. She had her dad's always been on the scene, and then she's had coaches that have fallen by the wayside and then come back on board. And I never quite know where she is, really. I don't really know what to expect. She plays a heck of a lot. So in answer to your question, I don't feel strongly either way. I feel like we could have seen the best of her. But then I also think, what an incredible athlete she still is. And she still seems to have passion for the sport. So, but I just feel like if you're going to get better, if she's going to do more than she already has, she needs to do something a little different, or at least have somewhere else to go when she's not blazing winners all over the shop. And as for the troll, Jasmine Paolini, who's just trying to rub my nose in it, congratulations, Jasmine. I mean, I actually think what a tenacious player she is. It's great to watch the way she just refused. I mean, you stand these two players side by side and tell anybody that doesn't know who they are that Jasmine Paolini is going to win, and nobody's taking that as believable, because they're just such different physical specimens. But she's not having it. she just digs in and digs in. And yeah, I mean, she's way achieving more than I expected her to do, and good for her.
Absolutely. She did Garcia, that is, alongside Kristina Medenovic. They did come back and win the doubles over Cocchioretto and Trevisan, 10-6 in the third. So that's a point on the board in that tie, although overall they lost it. They don't have to come back and play tomorrow, but Italy do. Italy have to play Germany tomorrow. Matt, why was Trevisan and Cornet your cup of tea?
Well, the nominations came through while I was having breakfast, and I just thought that it seemed like it was going to be dramatic. I mean, it's Trevisan and Cornet. Like, how could it not be dramatic? And I just thought that was a fun start to the day. And it was. It was just one of those slightly wild, slightly crazy tennis matches. There were 16 breaks of serve in the match altogether. It took Trevisan 71 minutes to hold serve. You know, they've been playing for over an hour. Trevisan hadn't held serve. And then there was a portion of 75 minutes within the match where Cornet didn't hold serve. You know, it was just so fun. And it was slightly ruined by the fact that, unfortunately, Cornet started feeling physically quite unwell. She was feeling dizzy. And I think that sort of really ended up sort of affecting the match and helped Trevisan turn it round, as well as a change of tactic by Trevisan. It was really obvious in the first set that she sort of had it all wrong. She was going for too much. She hasn't got a big game, and she was trying to play with a big game. But she stopped doing that in the second set and started looping the ball and playing with a little height over the net and just pushing Cornet back. And that was a really, really effective tactic. And yeah, she ended up winning. Both players just always bring so much energy and so much heart to the court, and they certainly did that today. It was quite an interesting sort of strategy, I suppose, because again, you might think, well, Elise Cornet, of course she's going to play for France. You know, she is, you know, a real stalwart and has got so much experience. But kind of like we were saying yesterday about Alicia Molik, it was a pick based on who Elise Cornet used to be, really, because she has not had a good season at all. She does have a good record over Trevisan. It was a 3-0 head-to-head. So I think that was maybe part of the reason why Julien Beneteau, the captain, went for Cornet. But, you know, there's a slightly interesting dynamic to the French team at the moment that Varvara Gracheva has become a French citizen. She has nationalized as French now, so she can play, switching from Russian. And I think, you know, she was asked about that, Cornet, and I think, you know, everyone's getting on very well, but I think there is a period of sort of integration that's kind of required, and a sort of period for the captain to maybe trust her, I suppose, and maybe feel like he can use her as an option. And I think Cornet was just maybe the slightly easier pick because of everything that she's sort of done in the past. So I think they'll get there with Gracheva, and she's a good sort of quite tricky player. I always sort of rate her when I watch her. So I'm sure in the future she will be an option. But right now, when you've got Cornet there, I can understand why Julien Beneteau went for her. But maybe in hindsight, it wasn't quite the best pick. And Cornet herself did sort of hint at that, saying, well, Trevisan has been in way better form than I've been this year, and that kind of showed on the court today.
France have got Germany on Friday. Would you expect Cornet to play there? Do you think Beneteau will reach for the comfort blanket again?
I think we'll have to see how she's feeling, because, as I said, she wasn't feeling well during that match. She didn't look well in press, I must say. Kind of like Spain, there's a chance that tie won't be live, you know, because Italy have a chance to seal the tie tomorrow when they play Germany. So maybe if it is a dead tie, that would be a chance to maybe use Gracheva and sort of start introducing her into this team. France are just always such an interesting topic of conversation in Billie Jean King Cup and Davis Cup. You know, they've always been the most opposed, I think, to the format change. You know, it goes back to our show on the Four Musketeers to really sort of understand what what this competition and the Davis Cup means to France. So I'm always just so sort of intrigued. I must say, I found the dynamic in the press conference weird, because the way they do their press conference, the French, and apparently they always do this, so I might be reading way too much into it, but what they do is they bring the captain and the doubles teams right at the end, as all teams do. But what the French insist on is that you only ask the players questions to begin with. So you have questions with the players in English and then in the national language, and then the players leave, and then the captain takes the questions, rather than them all taking the questions together. Now, when you've just lost a tie, that sort of gives the impression of a disconnect and a slight feeling that the captain not isn't sort of trusted to say what he wants to say in front of the players, but it kind of feels a little bit like that. It's like, shouldn't we all be in this together? Shouldn't we all be sort of fielding questions together? But no, the fact that the first, you know, the players answer, then they leave, and then it's like, oh, what does the boss say? You know, it's a slightly strange feel to it. And I might be reading too much into that just because of the fact that they lost, and I'm sure they do that after victories as well. But I don't know, it clanged a bit for me in that press conference. I was kind of like, I've just been in the press conference with Italy where the spirit is so clear amongst them. They're all fighting for the same thing. And it didn't really feel like that with France, even if they are. But optically, that just sort of didn't come across.
That's such an interesting insight. Wow. Tough for these teams that have to come back and play tomorrow. Canada's still on court in this doubles. They're playing Poland tomorrow. And as I said, Italy coming back to play Germany tomorrow as well. The other two ties, as Matt said, it goes up to four ties tomorrow. The second court comes into use. We have Switzerland against the USA. We have Australia, Kazakhstan, and then we have Canada, Poland, and Italy, Germany. Tell us what you're looking forward to about Thursday, Matt. What are some things to look out for?
I think Elena Rybakina is someone to look out for. She might be unleashed by the Kazakhstan team. She's obviously the highest ranked player here. She did her some of her media commitments today, having not been here for the pre-tournament press conferences. And then I think our first look at the US team, and I'm just very intrigued by who they might pick, you know, because quite frankly, they've got five possible singles options. You know, they can all play good singles, everyone who Cathy Rinaldi's got there. I don't really have a hunch who it might be. There's obviously Collins, Kenin, Stevens, Stearns, and Townsend, you know, so two of those are going to be picked for singles. And I think that's very intriguing. And then, of course, can Italy and can Canada wrap it up and sort of seal the deal? So, yeah, there's lots going on tomorrow.
Matt, can I ask who you feel is going to give us our first deciding doubles rubber? Because we haven't had one yet, have we? And I want one.
Gosh, what a question, David, to put me on the spot with. Let's have a think.
It's true. We need one, don't we? It is one of the best things about these team competitions, that the doubles flourishes or can flourish, can be critical and fun and exciting. And it's a shame that we haven't seen that yet.
Yeah.
Maybe I was buying you some time there, Matt, with a little soliloquy.
Maybe Germany, Italy?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think.
Okay.
Jasmine will level it up, and then it'll be.
Does Jasmine do doubles?
I don't think so. I want to see.
No, I think
she didn't play today, did she?
I think the doubles they had today, Cocchioretto and Trevisan, would be their.
But they lost.
Would be their strongest, but a very close match against Garcia.
Yes,
and
against a very
Kristina
fair.
Mladenovic, who are obviously a great doubles team.
Busy old day tomorrow, isn't it? Going from two ties to four is that's quite a lot. I mean, I appreciate sort of easing us in gently, but it does feel like suddenly we're going to be in a different universe tomorrow in terms of volume of stuff going on. And you know, times that by 10 for poor old Matt Roberts. I hope you get a good lunch, Matt.
Did you have the hake, by the way, Matt? Did you go with the hake?
I don't think Matt's a hake guy.
No, I didn't have the garlicky hake. I had fish this evening, which was nice, actually.
Did you have chicken for lunch?
No, there was gutting. There was no chicken on the menu. I had some...
Matt thinks...
Slightly underwhelming
just to
ham.
Fill you in, listeners, Matt thinks chicken is the most exciting thing in the world. If chicken is on a menu, which it's on most of the menus... Matt's like, oh, there's chicken.
Without fail.
I had a text from my sister today who said, oh, I see Catherine and David are mocking you for your chicken obsession, just like we do.
Oh, really? Is it a family thing too?
Oh, we need to compare notes.
Apparently
it's
so.
It's just such a... It's not. Look, I like chicken as much as the next guy. It's just that usually sort of foods that people are obsessive about are a little bit, you know...
Oysters,
different.
Caviar.
Yeah. Or, I don't know, I really love garlicky hake, but just chicken, which is on every menu.
In whiskey sauce.
It's great. It's good. It's good to be easily pleased, Matt.
I am easily pleased.
Bodes well in life. I'm thoughts and prayers for your lunch tomorrow, Matt. Sounds like you're going to need it. Fun day, though. Fun day ahead. I'm with David. My wish for the day is for some fun doubles, a decisive doubles rubber. It's not too much to ask, folks, or it shouldn't be. On my screen at the moment is, once again, Jeannie Bouchard. Extraordinary. That doubles is ongoing. It's currently on a shot where I can't see the score. That's very helpful, isn't it? It is one love Spain. They've got the early break.
They've only played one game.
Hang on. I might
surely
be behind.
That's
I might be behind. Set,
surely.
No, well, hang on. I've just caught up with live and now it's two love Spain.
They've only played two games.
Oh, no. Hang on. My stream is being weird. No, this is...
My live score says 3-2 to Bouchard and Dabrowski in the first set.
God, that's still a long way to go, though.
Well, my live stream says the wrong players. Mine says Basols, Ribera and Bookshire and Dabrowski and Fernandez, which is... So I've neither got the right players nor the right score. Great. You know where to come for your well-informed... What was I accused of being on Twitter the other day, Matt? Catherine is ill-informed
drunk.
And always drunk.
Oh. That's delightful.
I don't know.
Did we block that person?
Yes,
I hope so.
Immediately.
Good.
Twitter.
It's good job you
stuff.
Didn't tell me about that. I'd have been wanting to have that out. Yeah.
I mean, what can you say, David? There's no point taking on people like that.
Good blocking.
I'm drinking green tea for anybody that wants to know. I don't know why I'm defending myself against the internet. Right, let's get to bed, shall we? Busy one tomorrow. We'll be back with another podcast. Of course, we are daily throughout the Billie Jean King Cup. Next week, we'll be covering the ATP Finals in Turin. I'm flying out there on Friday. Then we're daily from the Davis Cup, where Matt will be on site in Malaga as well. So many podcasts to come over the coming weeks. Matt's got a slightly despairing look about him at the mention of that. Don't worry, Matt, there'll be chicken on the menu everywhere. We have our mascots. I've got Xenia. David's got Maisie.
Amazing.
And Matt has got Darwin. Billie Jean is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. We have our top folks and executive producers. I'm going to try and say them in a different order just for a fun time tonight. Hannah, oh God, it's really hard. Hannah, Drew and Jamie. Woo! And Matt, we have shout outs.
We do. We have Katie Summerfield, who is in Putney.
Hey, Katie.
Oh, hello, Katie. Do you know what part of Putney?
She's written Putney, England.
I don't know any parts apart from where you live.
There's East Putney. There's
Putney Exchange.
Putney Heath. There's Putney Hill. There's
She's
Putney
living
Exchange.
At the Putney
Not many
Exchange.
People resident in the Putney Exchange, David. Katie. We always have a problem with Katie's, don't we?
No.
Katie Swan.
No, Katie's are fine. Kates are the issue.
Mary Carrillo supplied us with a Kate that we've got up our sleeves, haven't we, for the next Kate. But Katie, we've got Swan.
Bolter.
Any non-British Katies?
There's Katie McNally, but that's a
yes,
that's
with
a different
C.
pew situation.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you, Katie. What an excellent place you've chosen to live.
We've got Olivia Rizzo, who is a youth tennis coach.
Oh. Whoa! Good work, Olivia.
Love that. Where is Olivia a youth tennis coach?
In New York.
Nice. Rizzo. Imagine having the surname Rizzo. I'm going to make a Grease reference, which Olivia probably gets all the time.
Yeah.
So apologies, Olivia, but come on, if your surname's Rizzo, you've got to lean into the Grease vibes.
I keep having flashbacks to Rizzo whenever I watch The West Wing, which I'm working my way through now. Because the...
Stockard Channing.
Yeah, Stockard Channing is the wife of the First Lady. In that, and goodness me, where have the years gone?
I'm slightly concerned that Matt's never seen Grease.
No, I have.
David.
I have.
Oh, okay, good.
It's good, isn't it?
All good. Yes.
Olivia, thanks for
thank you,
friend.
Olivia. Like Olivia Gadecki. Oh,
yes.
Very good. Very good.
We've also got Mark Hardesty.
Right, Mark.
Ooh.
Like Mark Philippoussis.
Hello, Mark.
Like yes. Mark Rosse, different spelling.
Mark with a K?
Yes.
Not like Mark Andreas Huesler.
Oh, you are on fire today, Catherine.
Aren't I just?
Dear, oh dear.
Mark is Woodford. From Norman, Oklahoma.
Oh.
Oh. Oklahoma featured in one of my New York Times crossword clues today.
I'm reading a book.
There's a city called Enid.
Oh, well done.
I did, but not because I knew the answer. The clue was city in Oklahoma that is also a girl's name. And I got the E and the D, the beginning and the end. So deduced it from there. Sorry, David, as you were.
Well, I was just going to say that I've been reading a book on holiday featuring a person from Oklahoma who moves to Croatia and marries somebody from Croatia. It's a true life story, and the reason I was reading it is because I also married somebody from Croatia, and I was very amused by all the tales of differences in culture and attitudes. So now I know a very small amount about Oklahoma to go with my lots of knowledge about Croatia.
Thank you, Mark, for sending us on all sorts of tangents.
Cheers, Mark.
And finally tonight we have Anna Bendo, who is from Dublin, Ohio.
Ooh.
Mm. Oh, hello.
And Anna says, very happy that the Cincinnati tournament is staying in Cincy. This has been my one opportunity to see live tennis. I go with my son, who's also a big tennis player and fan. And I must say, I feel like we have a disproportionate number of shout-outs of people who love the Cincinnati tournament. It does really feel like there is a strong connection to that tournament.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's true. Yeah.
I think it's important to people who are from the area and who I think people just went year after year. That's their annual journey to watch tennis. If it's nowhere else, it's there. And you can imagine just what a hole that would have left for so many people had they moved that tournament. I know it would have created an opportunity for other people maybe, but I don't know. I'm really pleased that it's staying, and I'm particularly pleased for you, Anna.
Yeah, as am I. I like Anna Wintour, who's quite a big tennis fan.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen Anna Wintour's eyes.
Was it exciting?
I mean, they looked like they hadn't seen daylight for a long time. They were shrunken. sort of shriveled in.
Okay.
Into her head.
What was the what was the setting? What was the scenario?
It was in the tunnel at the Australian Open, Rod Laver Arena. She was participating in a some sort of on-court presentation that was between matches or following a match, the winner of which I was waiting in the flash interview area, which is also pretty much in the tunnel, to interview. Can't remember who it was. So I was standing there. This is when I was working for Eurosport. I was standing there waiting to do this interview, and Anna Wintour is in the tunnel with her separate hair, makeup and stylist person sort of fluffing around her. And I saw her disappear off into a just a little side alcove, which you wouldn't even have known existed, and remove her sunglasses for a touch-up.
Wow.
I thought I might turn to stone, but I didn't. Here I am. Any actual tennis players called Anna?
Ivanovic, Chakvetadze. Different spelling.
Very good.
Probably.
I think Anna Chakvetadze is A-N-N-A. Great. Well done, us. And thank you, Anna. Thank you to all of our shout-outs. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting the Billie Jean King Cup. This tournament is not perfect, but it'll never be perfect without support, will it? So thank you for listening. We'll be back tomorrow. We'll speak to you then.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Investment professionals reveal their best mentors, how they find their next great idea, and a few funny stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. American Funds Distributors, Inc.